And I ran across this interesting little tidbit about London. And in London, there is a place called the Lost Property Office in London. Matter of fact, it is on, and I've never been to London, but I was reading about this. It's on Baker Street, and it is literally across the street from Sherlock Holmes' fictitious residence. I mean, when they gave the address, when Sir Arthur Conan Doyle wrote the stories, he had Sherlock Holmes on Baker Street, and the address was across the street from the Lost Property Office. And I figure if you were going to find things, what better place to be than across the street from Sherlock Holmes' house? It's been there since 1933, and anything that's lost on public transportation ends up here, in case you want to reclaim it. I mean, I think that's pretty interesting. Every year, about 150,000 to 200,000 articles are found and brought to this place in an attempt to locate the owners. I mean, people lose all sorts of things, like normal stuff, right? Like watches, backpacks, you know, lunch bags, umbrellas, cell phones, those normal kinds of things. And in that 1 year, they recovered 38,000 books, 29,000 bags, and 28,000 pieces of clothing on public transportation, all brought to the Lost Property Office. But sometimes there's really interesting things that show up. And I'm just telling you, if you want a little, you know, fun of extracurricular activity, get on Google and do an image search on the Lost Property Office, and you can see all sorts of things that are very interesting. For example, wheelchairs, false teeth, a suitcase full of money, a skull, and a lawnmower. Could you imagine? Oh, I just left my lawnmower on the subway. You know, it kind of reminds me, and I know not all of you are Harry Potter people, but in Harry Potter movie, there was this room called the Room of Requirement, and anytime they were looking for something lost, it was always in the Room of Requirement. I think this is like the closest thing you get in real life to the Harry Potter Room of Requirement. Now, you heard me saying that I've already lost stuff in my life, and some of you might remember back in May. Remember when I was going to Synod Assembly, and I was actually coming up from San Diego, and I left my cell phone in the taxi? Some of you might have remembered that I literally was early in the morning. I had to get to Lodi. I had to fly from San Diego. I left my cell phone in the taxi, and I knew immediately that I'd lost it, and I didn't think I was going to get it back. And luckily, this really nice lady from United Airlines kind of calmed me down, and she said, I'm going to call your cell phone. Maybe the taxi guy will answer. And she got my phone back for me. I was like, whew. But it kind of makes you think, what does Jesus think about people who are lost, spiritually lost? Maybe even people who don't even want a connection with God. They don't even think God exists. What does Jesus think about those people? And the people who think what we do on a Sunday morning is really just a bunch of mumbo jumbo. We have clarification today. Jesus speaks to this very issue about how maybe God views and how we should view people who are outside the church family, or just on the margins of a church family. And it just so happens that I've preached on this before because it's probably one of my favorite chapters of the Bible, because it expresses the grace of God so clearly. But it also happens to be, and you can check me, you can do fact check, this is the lectionary reading for the day. So in other words, I just didn't pull this out of my hat. This is the prescribed reading. Go ahead, double check me, Melody. See if I'm lying. Okay, good. So this is what happens. Jesus is spending some time with outsiders. The people who feel far away from God. The kind of people that religious authorities, those kind of people, people who wear robes like this, wouldn't associate with. People who feel far away from God. And Jesus is spending some time talking to these people because they wanted to hear that God loved them just as much as anybody. And Jesus, as you know, is always ready to share that love. But the religious leaders, the other teachers and the other lawyers, the religious lawyers, those people actually judged Jesus for sharing God's love with these people who were on the outside or people who were on the margins. They couldn't believe a rabbi, a teacher, would actually spend time with these people. Now, Jesus hears the commotion as he's talking to these so-called outsiders. And he's like, there's not a problem here. Jesus does not see a problem. And even though these religious people are judging Jesus for just talking to these people, Jesus is not going to let this go. He's just not. Jesus is not a duck in water. He is not going to let this slide off his back. So he stops what he is doing, and he not only addresses these outsiders, but he also addresses the religious people all at the same time. And he's going to answer the question, does God love everybody? Now, you know this enough. If you've been in the church, you know this. He doesn't tell one story or two stories. He tells three stories about people who are on the outside looking in to find out, does God really care? And as you know, the story begins. Jesus tells this parable, and he says, suppose one of you has 100 sheep and he loses one of them. Do you not leave the 99 in the open country and go after that one until he finds it? So Jesus begins with a story about a shepherd who loses his sheep. And he goes off to look for this one sheep. And he is so excited that when he finds this one sheep, he calls his friends and he throws a party. Now, the deal is, Jesus isn't talking about sheep. He's talking about people. He's talking about us. And what he wants to point out to us is that sometimes life gets busy, sometimes life gets tragic, sometimes life gets hard, and something happens that becomes all-consuming. And it's so big, and that thing gets so magnified because we're focused on it, that it takes up our entire field of view. And you just lose your way. That you wander away from the most important things because whatever that thing is going on in your life is all consuming. Now, I saw this, and I think this is just great. Jesus leaving the 99 to find one seems illogical, irrational, and even senseless until that one is you. It's so true. And so we have this parable where Jesus is talking about people who unintentionally wander away. Can you imagine that Jesus cares about people who get distracted, who become consumed with one thing, whether it's good or bad or somewhere in the middle, that Jesus cares about those who've lost their way? Not unlike this guy here. I think I've told you about the sheep in New Zealand that wandered away once. It wasn't intentional. It was unintentional because sheep wander and the head shepherd didn't close the gate and this thing wandered off. And they kept trying to recatch this sheep. And this sheep would be out on a hillside and they'd see it and they'd go after it and he'd disappear. Sometime later, they'd find him in a pasture that was ungated, and they'd try to get him, and he'd wander off again. They couldn't get to him. Even once they saw him up, because New Zealand, up on the side of a mountain, and they tried to go up there and get him, and they couldn't. And he was on the loose, and they kept seeing him off and on for 6 years. Could you imagine the wandering sheep? 6 years. But they finally caught up to him, and they found him in a cave. And he wasn't very mobile after 6 years because he had a foot of wool all over him. Who couldn't stand to lose a foot of wool? You know what I'm saying? Like, this guy wasn't very mobile. And so to even get him out of that cave, they had to shear the front of his face so he could see again. And then they brought him down. But he had been so weighed down by the wandering and the wool growing that he didn't even know how to get home. So they took him home, they sheared him, his burden was lifted, and he felt better, I'm sure. I mean, we couldn't talk to the sheep, but I'm sure he felt better. But it was all because of an unintentional, an unintended walk. Jesus isn't talking about sheep. He's talking about us. Is that sometimes we get busy and we get distracted and something seems really big in our lives and we forget about the one who loves us more than our mama does. Jesus says, people like that matter to me. People who wander away matter to Jesus. And if they matter to Jesus, maybe they should matter to us too. But he's not done, right? I mean, you know how this goes. Then we get into this place where he says, suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one of them. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? You know, this wasn't a quarter this woman had. I mean, this would have had value, maybe even upwards of 10% of her life savings. It was like her savings account, and she lost 10% of it. And this wasn't like she was digging through the back of the couch cushions to see if any change had fallen back, you know. You're like, you know, you all know, like when you have guests over and then they leave and you stick your hands back there. No, I'm kidding. I did it as a kid, though. I will admit that. This is big money. So she sweeps the house, she finds it, and she has a party, just like the other story. It's like a party because she's so happy, and the party doesn't even cost as much as, obviously, the one coin. It's different than the sheep story because coins can't lose themselves. Coins are passive. Someone else causes coins to be lost. Now, if most of you know, this past week we crossed another anniversary of 9/11, right? And every year it makes me think about what was going on in my life when that happened. I'm sure it does you. I had flown home from Minneapolis the night before. So I was in the air the night before 9/11, got home super late at night, and that was a Monday night. I remember that because Tuesday morning was staff meeting, and woke up, turn on the news like I normally do on Tuesday morning before a staff meeting as I'm getting ready, and as you all know, watch the things unfold in New York and in Pennsylvania and in Washington, D.C. Shock to all of us. Our sense of security was shattered. I mean, you remember all these things. Tragedies of that proportion don't happen here. They happen other places. And kind of somewhere in the back of our minds, I think a lot of us knew that the world in our country would never be the same. Even though we didn't know what that meant, it just wouldn't be the same. And in the midst of that week, the shock, the mourning, even vigils, the church I was at, we had a vigil. There was something else that happened that wasn't nearly as important, but it was down here. Maybe you remember, the stock market was closed. It was closed for the rest of the week. I don't know if you remember that. It was closed for 5 days. And so while we were kind of dealing with the emotional stuff up here, you know, the other commentators were like, what's going to happen when the market finally opens? And everybody was, you know, knew it was going to take a dip. We just didn't know how much of a dip. And it finally opened, and yes, it did dip. And here's the point of this, is that money, whatever you had in the market on 9/11, 2001, wasn't going to lose itself. It was the money's passive. Something or someone would have to have an effect on it for it to lose value. Now, this story isn't about money, but it is about the passiveness of what is happening. Maybe it's like this, that someone gave up on God because a religious person once said to them, well, you're not loved, or you're not accepted, or God doesn't care about you as much as me, or that someone did something to cause a rift in their life that made them doubt that God loved them. They were passive in this moment because someone else did something to them to push them away. Maybe they came to church and told, well, you can't sit here. Or your type are not welcome here. And they never came back. They didn't get lost on their own. Someone pushed them out the door. They didn't even wait to find direction. They didn't even want to be lost. But someone made sure they would never come back. The coin, like a person, was passive in the situation. And Jesus says, those people matter to me. So I hope they matter to you. Matter of fact, he doesn't even just say they matter to me. He says, I will go looking for those types of people. Those who wander off unintentionally and those who are pushed away. Jesus says, they matter to me so much that I will go looking for them. And if they matter to Jesus, maybe they should matter to us. And then there's that third story, which most of you know. The story of the lost son, which in church terms, we always call that the prodigal son. And this one's different because he wants to be gone. So we had somebody who unintendedly wandered off. We had someone passively pushed away. And now we have someone who just wants to be gone. He wants to be far away. He wants to do his own thing. He doesn't want any accountability. He doesn't want to be loved. He just wants to do what he wants to do. And so about the son, well, two sons and a father are farmers. One of them wants his inheritance. He can't wait for his dad to pass and will him the money. He just wants his money now. He wants to cash out. He wants to go. He didn't like life on the farm. He wanted to go to the big city with bright lights and all the great stuff. And this is the life he always wanted. So his father graciously gave him his money and he cashed out and he went to the city. He spent his money. He was living large. He even found some friends who'd help him spend his money. How great is that? Really good friends. He's like, oh, you got money to burn? Oh, yeah, let me help you. And then it was all gone. This fine young Jewish boy, far from home, with no money. He finally had to get a job. He was living large until the money was gone. Now he had to work. And things were so hard for this fine young Jewish boy. He had to work at a pig farm, which is not so good if you're kosher. Not only that, but then he was so hungry, he even thought about eating pig food. I mean, that's how low life was. And now he had a new dream. Instead of being in the big city, he just wanted to go home. And he said, look, I'm just going to admit it. I'm a failure as a son. I'm going to beg to be not a son, but a hired hand. I just want to go home. And so he walks. He starts walking this long walk. Really a walk of shame back home. And he keeps rehearsing this speech. I'm a failure. I'm not worthy to be called your son. Just let me be a hired hand. I'll live in the barn. I'll eat leftovers. I don't care. Just let me come home. So he turns down the last dirt path to his father's farm. And something weird happens. Something strange happens. His father, who is out looking over the hill and over the road there, sees him, and he goes running to his son. Now, we lose all the nuance in this here in the 21st century. Is back then, it was honor, shame, and this son had shamed the family. It was time for this son to come and grovel. Now, it was up to the father to say, okay, well, I'll let you back in. But it was not what you would expect a father to go running to the son. It's like, no, he needs to come and he needs to beg for forgiveness. And this is almost scandalous because the father runs to the son. And if you were hearing the story for the first time, you're thinking to yourself, okay, this is it. The son's going to get. He's disrespected his dad. He's wasted money. He's going to get what he deserves. And this total switch happens where the father runs to him and throws his arms around him. And he says, look, you're not going to be a hired servant. You are welcomed back into my family, our family. Even though you intentionally wandered away. And as you know, there's a brother in there who's just livid about this. Won't even step foot in the house because he hears the party for his brother. He's like, there's no way. And the father comes out and he says, look, we need to treat this brother of yours like he had died and he has been brought back to life. Jesus was talking about religious people and non-religious people and how we're going to treat those who actually intentionally walk away and say, I don't want anything to do with the church, but then might have an opening to say, welcome back. Are we going to treat them like that brother or are we going to be like the father and say, no, come on back, come on in? All of these types of people matter to Jesus. Whether you unintentionally wandered away, whether you were passively pushed away, or whether you just said, I've had enough of religious people. Jesus says, those people matter to me. And now here's the other thing that gets lost in this. is so often, and I don't want you to miss this, is that we see this as a one-time transaction. Oh, I wasn't a person of faith, and well, now I believe, and now I'm in, and that's a one. This is like the ebb and flow of life, folks. This isn't like a one-time transaction, like I'm out, I'm in. There are times in our life we wander away, and by the goodness of God, we're directed back in. And sometimes we're feeling really close in our walk, and sometimes things happen, people, life itself, and we're far away. So this in and out thing isn't as clean as what Jesus portrays in three parables, is that this is the ebb and flow of life, of in and out and ups and downs. So we shouldn't write people off because we're no more than a tragedy away from being in that same place. You see, Jesus told the story of the prodigal son to make a simple point. Never mind what you've done. Just come home. I mean, you know that there are people who never set foot in a church again because of the way some churches have acted. You know that there are people who never set foot in a church again because somebody's website said, everybody's welcome, and they didn't mean it. Sometimes we have to overcome the damage done by other churches. Jesus did that in Luke 15. That's what we heard today. Told three stories to religious outcasts that God loves them. Enough so that God says, I will go out on an all-out search to find my children. But the great part of it is that when they are found, there's a party in heaven. And I think that that is a good thing to think about, is that Jesus has a party every time someone who is spiritually lost is found. Maybe that's a good model for us. Maybe we should party a little bit more. Amen.